Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Michelle Erfer,
and Kimberly Senna Moore.
We are three board-certified music therapists who are passionate about our work and feel we have something to say. Join us each month as we share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy and working as a music therapist. Thank you for joining us.
All right, listeners. We didn't know if this would happen until yesterday as of the recording date, but guess who is joining us just 3 weeks after giving birth? Michelle,
yay!
Yes, hello.
I have to give us the quick rundown. I'm thrilled, you know, no pressure or anything, but I'm kind of thrilled that you're here.
Me too.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, and it was really important for me to be on this call because to me it's like a visit because I don't want to say stuck, but you know, I'm with my baby and little Eddie is awesome and we had a great delivery and he's perfect. He's completely perfect. But as you know, with little babies, you can't go anywhere like the first 2 months. So I'm excited to be talking to you guys because it's like a visit.
Adult time, right?
Yeah, adult time. And Eddie's here. He's sitting on my lap right now.
Hi, Eddie.
In his room. I'm sitting in my chair, and he's on my lap, and he's looking at the computer. He's probably like, where are those voices coming from?
What a great way to record. And speaking of babies, I think Rachel has some news, too. We need this is our monthly baby fix here.
Yes, I know. I'm going to miss this after... I'm not pregnant anymore, and babies are old news.
Don't go there.
No. Well, yes, I do have some news. So a couple of weeks ago, we had our big ultrasound and then our big reveal, and we found out that we are expecting a boy. Yay. So add another boy to the music therapy roundtable.
I know, with all of us, our first kids are boys. It's kind of cool.
It is. It's such a crazy coincidence, but I love it.
Must be something in the water.
I
guess so. See, Rachel, it wasn't just the big unveil. I mean, you might need to tell our listeners a little bit about how you did this, because I have never heard of anybody else do it quite this way.
Well, it was my husband's idea. He's all for making a celebration out of everything, and he loves surprises. So when we went in for our ultrasound, we told the tech, don't tell us, just write it down in an envelope. We'll look at everything else, but tell us when we need to look away from the screen. So it was so cool. We got to see all the little baby parts and see that everything was going really well. But she told us to look away when he was not shy and showed off his goods. And so she wrote it down in an envelope and then – we passed the envelope on to Zach's father, who took the envelope to the cake place where he didn't look at the envelope. He just handed it over. They decorated the cake according to what the envelope said. And then later that night, all of our parents got together with us for dinner and we opened the cake and saw that it was decorated in blue and it said, it's a boy right on top. So that's how we all found out. And it was so exciting and so much fun and lots of crying and laughing and just awesome.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps just hearing. So, did you save dessert for the end or did you open it right away?
Zach wanted to wait till the end, but I was like, there is no way I'm sitting through an hour-long dinner waiting. So what we did was right when we got there, we looked at the cake and then we had them take it back and put it back and then we ate it after dinner. So. We didn't have to have that whole hour of suspense after an entire day.
It gave you something to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we started talking about names, which we had not even discussed one boy name up until that point. So yeah, we've got some work to do on that front. But
you got time.
We do. We have plenty of time.
I'm telling you, if you get stuck, just do Junior. It's easy.
I don't know. Zach Junior doesn't have the same ring to it as Edward Junior. Or Edward V.
Yeah. That takes a lot of work to get up there.
True.
Yeah, you got a couple variations with Edward that you can work with.
So. Exactly. Zach is Zach.
Zachy doesn't quite had the same ring as Eddie.
No, not so much.
Nice. And you're feeling all right, Rachel? Things are progressing well?
Yeah, things are really good. I've been feeling great, getting my energy back, which is nice. And I've been feeling lots of baby kicks. So that's the best part. I love it.
Oh, that's fun.
It is. It is really fun. So the fun part of pregnancy, finally.
Finally, the fun part.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love reliving this vicariously through you two.
Yes, yes. What's new with you, Kimberly? What's been going on?
Well, you all shared all these really great things, and I have strep right now. So not quite as much fun news. I'm doing okay. I'm on meds and feel fine, but I'm going to try to mute the hacking that happens. But I have restarted my last semester of doctoral.
Woo-hoo. I can't believe it.
I know. It is flown by.
I'm sure you don't think so, but...
Well, I don't think so when I'm in the midst of it, but when I look back on it, it has flown. So I'm really going to enjoy my classes this semester. They're going to be challenging. They're going to push me, and that's what I like. That's why I'm doing this. So I'm really, really excited. And there are some other people in this interdisciplinary PhD program who are a year ahead of me. And they are submitting the first drafts of their dissertation, which is probably where I'm going to be in a year. And that kind of blows my mind just a little bit. So I'm doing well and, you know, busy as a bee, but really, really enjoying it.
Good. That's awesome.
So since life is all hunky-dory with all three of us, should we dive on in?
Yeah, let's do it. As music therapists, we begin building our libraries during our studies, textbooks, journal articles, and other readings that are assigned to us. But when it comes time to enter the professional world, what kinds of materials do you choose to add to your library? In episode 39 of the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast, we'll discuss the must-have books on our shelves and how we go about selecting the reading material that will benefit our work most. So I have to be honest with you guys, this morning after getting ready for this podcast, I literally had to go to my bookshelf and sit down in front of it and refresh my memory as to what's actually on it, which makes me feel kind of guilty because I'm thinking, gosh, I have a lot of good stuff here. Why am I not doing this on a more regular basis?
Let's see, and who knows, maybe this recording this and being reminded of that will prompt you to go back and read on a regular basis.
I'm hoping so, because I really discovered some stuff that I had kind of looked through but not really dug deep into and things that I want to return to. So yeah, I think this is a good way to kind of get back to all that stuff.
To kickstart that.
Yes, exactly. So, and one of the first things that I noticed on my bookshelf that I have – a lot of are all those old textbooks and journals and articles and things that I got while I was in grad school studying music therapy. And I'm curious as to how much of that stuff you guys kept too.
Well, when it comes to the music therapy related things, I've pretty much kept all of it.
Yeah, me too. But
had any sort of even loose connection, like, you know, I still have some of my old psychology textbooks and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think with my undergraduate, I kept mostly just music therapy related materials. With my master's degree, I kept music therapy plus, you know, some of my psychology texts and things like that. And with my doctorate, I'm probably going to just keep everything.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting for me because, you know, I did everything at once. I did my equivalency and my master's at the same time. So, you know, I have all those psychology books, all of the undergrad. I have my intro to music therapy book sitting on my shelf. But it's nice to have, you know, a broad spectrum of all those things, especially, you know, if there's a parent that wants to know more about music therapy or somebody that just, you know, wants that basic information but doesn't want to, you know, delve into a higher level book. You know, just to have that really basic reading material is kind of nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I'm with you guys. I have all of my textbooks too. And actually, we had to, with Eddie, little Eddie coming, his room is my old office where all of those books were.
Right.
We had a bookshelf in there. And I had every, like, all of my binders, my notebooks from college and my internship, and which I hadn't looked at since then. And a lot of them have articles. And so they're not the text, they're just my notes.
Right.
I didn't. That was before we, like, really typed a lot.
Yeah.
You know? You had, like, papers.
Yeah.
Because that was, like, 9 years ago or something. But I actually just got rid of all of them. Not the textbooks, but my notes.
Oh, did you really? See, I still have all of mine in boxes downstairs.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have the storage space, and I haven't looked at them since then. And so I just was like, I'm getting rid of this. And yeah. It kind of felt good to have the space. But it was still like, I kept thinking, what if I need this?
Well, but, you know, and I've had thoughts about, because I really need to do that same thing, Michelle. I need to, you know, start clearing out all that stuff in the basement. But I've actually gone through those boxes several times and loaned some of that stuff to students that have shadowed me or internship people that come to interview me about music therapy. So I've actually put some of that stuff to use, but yeah, for the most part, it sits in boxes down in the basement.
Mm-hmm. And mine don't. All of my stuff, this is just how my very nerd organizational brain works. I have actually gone through all my notes and things that I don't need. I have tossed, and then everything else I have filed by topic.
Oh, wow.
So I have it all filed.
You have us beat.
So I don't have everything. And there are a handful of classes that I kept everything from.
Yeah.
Mostly from my master's, like psychology of music. That class I took at Colorado State was really great. And I kept all of my notes from that. Same with my graduate level neuroanatomy class. Kept all of my notes from that. And then, you know, from both my undergraduate and master's degrees, you know, special projects, I kept everything from that. Like, I did an honors project in my undergraduate, and I have all of that, too. So some of it is even just, you know, nostalgia, looking back and going, wow, I did that?
Right. It is kind of fun to look back at.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is.
So thinking about your own collections of books and things that you've kind of compiled over the years, do you find that you have a favorite author or favorite like publisher or just something that you see a lot of on your bookshelf?
See, I have a lot of variety. So I don't know that I have one favorite author.
Yeah.
I think I can answer that. But
yeah,
really been into, especially lately, and this was an interest that got, you know, sparked, I guess, with my master's and then continued a little bit when I was on my own in clinical practice and now is really guiding my doctoral level work is the literature from music neuroscience, music cognition and perception, things like that. So there are some authors from those fields that I have a lot of their materials from, like Peretz and Zatori and Sloboda and, you know, Tout and Patel. Those are just a handful of people, Schlaug. So I'm running into some of those names a lot. So they're all my favorite.
How PC of you.
In different ways.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah. But actually, well, speaking of this favorite author, I mean, I think even beyond just profession-related materials, I think an important part, too, of a library is also drawing from materials outside the profession.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And as I was looking at my bookshelf, I was kind of dividing things into different categories, and I realized that things really fall into four categories for me. So I have lots, of course, of music therapy-specific materials. And among those music therapy books and things, I have a lot of population-specific books, specifically things focused on kids with autism, kids with sensory processing disorders, and things like that. So that's one big category, of course. And then the other three were business and private practice, and then songwriting. I have a lot of songwriting books. And then the other is just a lot of inspiration, or I don't know what you would categorize that as, but things that you kind of turn to. And I thought of Michelle and her favorite book that she's always mentioning. And now I'm forgetting the name of it. The giant hairball or the big red ball. I don't know. There's two of them that she always mentions. But
you got it. It's the Orbiting the Giant Hairball and The Rules of the Red Rubber Ball.
That's it. Yeah. So I have a lot of books like that that are just kind of like good to turn to when you need that little pick-me-up or need that little kick in the pants. And so it's a nice mix of lots of different things.
Yeah, and so if I were to, you know, in looking at my library, so first, I think it's really interesting because in hearing you talk about kind of the different categories of materials you have in your library, it's really reflective of your interests and your strengths and kind of your needs,
right,
personally.
Right. Like,
same with mine. So in looking at my library, there's music therapy stuff. And even within the music therapy literature, you know, there's a little bit of general stuff, not so much popular. I don't have that many population specific things actually.
Okay.
It's a little bit more fleshed out when it comes to trauma, complex trauma, things like that. but not a whole lot yet. Most of it is, like I get music, neuroscience, cognition, perception, all that sciencey type of things. And then, historical stuff.
Okay.
I'm working on is a historical review, and so I have some oldies and goodies from, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Oh wow.
I have a really strong interest in history, and I haven't really been able to explore that, so this is kind of the first time I'm going to be able to, and so I'm really, really excited about that. So that's the other area. And so I have kind of music therapy subdivided, I guess, in three different areas. And then I have a lot of business things too. As I was running my business and trying to learn more about what it takes to own and manage and grow a business, I have a lot of those kind of materials as well. And the third area is for fun. And I actually do have two favorite authors that go into my for fun category.
Okay.
One is Jodi Picoult. And I liked her before she did the music therapy book.
Yes, me too. Me too.
New Home, which I was so excited when she did that. She's one of my favorites. And also Philippa Gregory, who does historical fiction, mostly centered around England, around the Tudor age, War of the Roses, Queen Elizabeth. She has about a dozen or so books from that kind of time in history in England. And she brings that time to life, and I really enjoy reading her.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So is there anything either on your shelf or in your wish list that you haven't gotten to yet that you're planning to read? I know, Kimberly, your reading list is probably much longer than ours with being in school.
It is, but funny enough, there is one book that I really want to read that I'm probably not going to be able to with my doctorate. So it's kind of on my wish list for after my doctorate. And Dr. Patel wrote a book on music, language, and the brain that I really, really want to read.
Nice.
Not going to happen, you know, until I'm finished with this whole PhD thing.
Right. Understandable.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, the book that I keep just reminding myself I need to pick this up and I need to read it is Petra Kern and Marsha Humpel just came out with the Early Childhood Music Therapy and Autism Spectrum Disorders book. And I just really admire their work, especially in this area. And so that's one that I've just been meaning to read, and it hasn't happened yet. But maybe now that I'm actually really actively thinking about it, I'll actually follow through with it.
That's right.
Hopefully.
Actually, when you were talking, Jill, I have a list on my iPhone of books that I want to read. It's kind of my wish list.
Really? Do you?
I do.
That's a good place to keep it because your iPhone's always with you. You can always, you know, refer back to it and even just go online and order it if you need to.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So Some of them are, again, are some of the older seminal pieces. Like there's some Vygotsky in here and some Luria that I want to read. And those are, and don't shoot me if I'm wrong in this, I think it's from like the early to mid 1900s. See, my history. I like history.
You do.
And there's another book, Carolyn Miss has a book that I started reading that I want to finish. It's called Anatomy of the Spirit. So that definitely falls in the more, you know, personal type of category. And another one on the list that seems really interesting is a book called My Stroke of Insight. And there was a woman who, her name, Jill Bolte Taylor, I believe. And she, you know, had a stroke, but I don't know exactly how this happened, but the way the stroke happened, she was able to remember it. And I think she's a neuroscientist or something like that. She was able to remember and record what was happening as it was happening. And she did a TED talk at some point, one of kind of the earlier TED talks that viral, kind of like Ken Robinson's The Creativity Education Talk. Mm-hmm. Anyways, some of the things on my list.
Very cool. Very diverse, too. That's good. Oh, hello, little Eddie.
Sorry. Eddie wanted to weigh in.
Eddie, what should your mommy read? Dominated the conversation, but I don't know. I have a lot to talk about.
No, that's good. I think that's good. Since, Kimberly, you do the most reading probably of the three of us, what are some tips for not only us, but our listeners as well? How can we actually put all of those books and all of that information in our library to use in our practice?
A couple ideas on this.
Okay, please share.
One is to read every day. And just as simple as that, even if it's just half an hour, spend time every day reading. And by reading, I don't necessarily mean just books. This could also be listening to podcasts or audiobooks or reading blogs. Just spend some time every day reading.
That's really good advice.
Yeah. So that's one. The second one is go back and reread some things too, because you always get new information or you learn things more deeply when you re-review and reread something. You're at a different place in your life. You've had new experiences. So that would be my second tip is, you know, it doesn't always have to be new stuff you're reading.
Sure.
But reread.
Nice tip.
And in terms of how to utilize it, I think part of it can be thoughts you have on your own. But and this is something I've never done because I think partly with the networking I've done and going back to school and things like that is kind of built in. But, you know, find a way to share some of these ideas and talk about them with somebody else. So maybe it's your spouse or, you know, significant other. Maybe you two read a book together. It doesn't have to be music therapy, but it'll generate ideas and stimulate dialogue. Maybe you know, start or join a book club. It could be a music therapy one. It can be a non-music therapy one. But again, in terms of utilizing it, putting it, some of the ideas and information to practice, sometimes, you know, the more the merrier in terms of sharing information and generating ideas.
Nice. I really like all of those tips. And I only have one to add, but it's one that for me at least has been really helpful. And that's to actually put those books and all of that reading material in plain sight and within reach. One of my issues is that my bookshelf is not actually in my office. It's in my waiting room, which is right next to my office, but still I'm not looking at it on a daily basis and I'm not, you know, looking over at it and remembering, oh, I should pick up that book. But if there's a book or two that that I'm needing information from or that I might be able to benefit from when I'm playing my sessions or whatever I'm doing, I put it on my desk. I've got a spot where I have a stack of books. And that way I see it, I look at it, and I say, oh yeah, I'll pick that book up and find something from here. So that's something that's helped me quite a bit.
And I think that's a great idea. If you see it, it's there. It's kind of in the forefront of your mind.
Exactly.
Even just, you know, having, if you pick one book and then have it out somewhere where you read it.
Right. And I've done that. I have these two books that have been sitting on my desk. And I remember a couple of months back, I was sitting here and I had all my work done for the day. I was so proud of myself. And I said, well, I want to keep being productive. So I picked up this book and I literally sat at my desk and read it from start to finish. And it had been sitting here for, I kid you not, like 3 months, and I hadn't touched it. And then I finally, you know, because it was there, I read it all the way through and I got a lot out of it. So I need to remember to do that more, switch those books out more often.
Right. That's right.
One of my tips is when I do read, it has to be, I don't know, I'm all about efficiency just because at my work, I have to find things right away. It seems like I have to answer questions. I'm always seeking out things to read to help answer my questions, not necessarily just to overall help myself, but there'll be a problem that I'm encountering or something where I'm with a certain population or I need to expand on a technique or something. So I always find myself reading a lot more case studies and journal articles rather than just like a whole book, you know, or I might read it sections of books and that kind of thing. And so I always, so while I don't always have time at work to read on an expand your knowledge kind of basis, I always try to find things that I can have succinct information right away. So that's why I always kind of gravitate to journal articles and case studies.
We'll be elaborating on this topic in our pro podcast by sharing specific tips for making the most of your personal library. This conversation is only available to the pro community, who also have access to a members-only forum, resource lists, videos, and exclusive podcasts. CMTE courses are also available to community members at no additional charge. At Music Therapy Pro, we've done the hard work already, and now we're sharing our secrets with you. Join the community at www.musictherapypro.com. All right, this month's cool resource of the month, and I know you're going to be shocked when you hear that it's iPad related coming from me, but this is something that I discovered kind of by accident, but it's so cool. So I do a lot of visual aids and I create a lot of visual aids for my clients, and I don't always necessarily want to print them out and have all of these pieces of paper laying everywhere just because it's hard to keep track of. So oftentimes I will make a document on the computer, and I was looking for a good place where I could display it on my iPad, and none of the apps that I had really scrolled exactly the way I wanted it to until I realized that I could use my Kindle app, which is a free app you can download from the iTunes store, and you can use that as a PDF reader, and it swipes right across from page to page just like I wanted it to. And it is my new favorite app, you guys. I use it in just about every music therapy session. And the kids love it because it's on the iPad. And the parents love it because I can send it to them and then they can use it on their iPads. The Kindle reader as a PDF reader for the iPad. So that is my cool resource of the month. And the best part is that it's a free app.
That is awesome.
Isn't that neat?
Cool.
I had no idea. And every time I tell, because parents are always like, ooh, what app is that? And I say, oh, it's just a PDF document that I created and I just downloaded it to Kindle.
Now we'd like to take a moment to give a shout out to our Music Therapy Pro supporters. And remember, when you are a Music Therapy Pro member, that's our premium site, you get special discounts from these supporters. So we want to say a special thank you to Mr. and Mrs. Marketing, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, the Music Therapy Research Blog, and the Boom Tote.
And for some announcements, actually really just one, last month, the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast, we participated in the third annual Social Media Advocacy Month. So every January for the past 3 years, music therapy bloggers and podcasters across the country have written about music therapy, what it takes to be an advocate. They've shared their stories. And it's just, it's a way to kind of kickstart the state legislative session, which is one of a busy time of year for advocacy and things like that. And we have wrapped up the Social Media Advocacy Month. And I feel like a broken record because I say this when I write about it. I say it when I talk about it. I am blown away with how this has grown, even in just 3 years. So every year we've had an increase in the number of blogs and podcasts that have participated in the project. And every year we've had an increase in the number of posts published. So this year, I think last year there were about 51 posts. This year we had 66.
Wow.
That is amazing.
I know. And the other really cool, there are other two really cool things about what happened this year that hasn't happened before. One, there has been more diversity in the post. So we've gotten multiple music videos, one coming from one of our friends here on the Music Therapy Roundtable, Rachel, which was awesome. I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah. And some infographics. So we're getting a little more diversity in terms of how information is being shared. And then also, this is the first time where I will spontaneously see, either through my Google alerts or on Facebook, that somebody I didn't even know, participated in this project. So I've had about, you know, 4 or 5 different blogs that I had never even heard about, and somehow they heard about this and participated and shared their post.
I noticed that too when I was looking at the big list on Music Therapy Maven, you know. There were all these music therapy blogs I'd never heard of
before.
Yeah,
same here. Same here. So
cool.
Not
that I'm doing a good job at keeping up with it, but like, whoa, I mean, it's huge now.
It is.
I know. It's so exciting. And so, I mean, now I can't wait to see what happens next year.
I know.
For a blogger or a podcaster who has participated in this, thank you for doing your part. To help increase exposure to music therapy and what it is and the good work we do every day.
All right. And we have a Sunday success story of the month. And this month it comes from Christy Joy, or CJ, Shiloh. Here's what she shared over in the Facebook forum. My proposal was accepted for MAR Regional. Laura Sun and I will be co-presenting on the panel, Community Music Therapy in Action. Congrats to CJ, who, if you haven't heard of CJ, you need to know about her because she is making huge waves in our profession with her ideas about community music therapy and sensory-friendly concerts. And definitely check out her website. We've got a link to it, The Musical Autist, in our show notes.
And actually, she was a guest on our show last year, so maybe let's add that show on.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
So that you guys can let her tell you herself what that's all about.
Good idea.
And just real quickly, I know we're going to put a link on the show notes about this, but I just want to say a little comment. I looked at what she is doing now that she has officially announced this project and who some of the people are that she's collaborating with all over the country who are going to start facilitating their own sensory-friendly concerts. I mean, kudos to CJ. This is so cool.
It is. It is really exciting.
It's a really big deal.
Thank you for joining us. To read a transcript of the show, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com, where you will also find links to each of our personal blogs. You can get podcast episodes sent directly to you by subscribing to the Music Therapy Roundtable through iTunes. If you enjoy our podcast, please write an iTunes review. It helps our rankings, which allows us to reach more people like you. If you have a comment or question, email us at info@musictherapyroundtable.com. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk again next month.